You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway Market, like no other market. Welcome to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back from the holidays. Happy New Year. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York. And while we're talking about sponsors and advertising, I'm going to do a little bit of advertising for myself. A little promo for myself. If you listen to the show regularly, you may remember that I've had a guest on occasionally named Lee Jones. He's a farmer. And his family, the Jones family, owns a farm called the Chef's Garden in Ohio, in Huron, Ohio. It's about 40 miles west of Cleveland. And the Joneses grow some of the most spectacular, premier, sustainable heirloom vegetables and herbs in the country. They were really some of the first. They do incredible stuff. And part of the Chef's Garden, they also have a sort of an educational arm called the Culinary Vegetable Institute, which is sort of separate facility, but it's a teaching center and research and retreat spot for chefs. And I've been going out there to teach classes and participate in their yearly big food and wine festival for many years now. I'll talk more about the food and wine festival as we get closer to the summer, as it comes up. But in the fall and the winter season, they offer earth-to-table dinners at the CVI, and they're open to the public. And the earth-to-table dinners are fundraisers for the third arm of the farm, which is a program they have called Veggie U, which I think I've talked about on the program, on my program before. Veggie U is an earth-to-table educational program for fourth graders to teach them about where their food comes and how to grow it and that whole system. And Veggie U is a great program, and it's in hundreds of classrooms now in Ohio, and the goal is to take the program national. So my point here, what I'm getting to, is that they offer these earth-to-table dinners in the winter, and they're fundraisers for Veggie U. And I'll be doing one at the end of February with my friend and colleague, Beach Flamholtz, who is caterer and personal chef in the Baltimore area. Beach and I met at the Food and Wine Festival at the Chef's Garden a few years ago, and we became friends, and we're going to be collaborating on a four-course earth-to-table meal with wine pairings featuring sustainably grown vegetables at the Chef's Garden, February 27th. We'll also be serving bison from Gunpowder Farms Bison in Maryland, and also Maryland goat cheese and local honey. So that's going to be a great event, and I actually am posting the menu for it on the Why We Cook Facebook page. So if you want to see the menu, you can check it out. If you live in the Ohio area and you want to come and support Veggie U and eat a great dinner and come and meet me, that would be great. And if you do, please come into the kitchen and say hello, because I'd love to meet you. I'm promoting this early on. It's not until the end of February. But, you know, buy your tickets now if you want to go. Should be really great. Should be really fun. So Beej and I have had, you know, a lot of conversations lately about planning our menu, because this dinner is at the end of February. And there is probably not a more challenging time of year than late winter for chefs to try to plan menus, at least in the Northeast and in the upper Midwest where we're going. It's root cellar city. I mean, we are so in the depths of the root cellar by then that you don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. It's still months from anything green. But luckily, at the farm, the Joneses grow a good amount of greens and microgreens and stuff in their greenhouses. So we have some options, but it's still pretty limited. It's winter hardy greens. You know, there aren't any tomatoes or zucchini, but that's okay because it's winter. But I really like the challenge of that. I like being able to have that opportunity to figure out, well, what can I serve that works within the season and that's not too out of season or from too far away. I don't want to have to bring stuff in. I want everything that's either grown there or that is coming from here or from Maryland, because that's where the two chefs are from. You know, any schmo can make a great dinner in August and September. That's really easy because you have everything to work with. That's, you know, bounty season. But the end of February is where it really gets fun and challenging. And back in October, I did a show about root vegetables. because the summer produce was rapidly slipping away from us, and you know, the fall was coming, and back then it felt really exciting because the weather was getting chilly and the air was crisp and there were hearty greens and pumpkins and roots and squashes, and it all felt really great and exciting. And now, with this extra cold winter spell that we've had here in New York, I'm already really starting to think about planting those arugula seeds that I bought in my garden, and you know, getting some bees into my beehive and getting things going. I'm waiting for a little bit of warmth to hit us. So to have to think about planning a winter menu is not as exciting as it was back in October when I was anticipating the fall. But nonetheless, you can take a look at the menu, like I said, on the Facebook page. But, you know, let me just talk about it a little bit here. These guys, Gunpowder Bison in Maryland, are friends with Beej, and so we're going to use their ground bison. We're going to use the scrap. We want to make this as low impact, this dinner, as possible. So instead of using big cuts of meat, we're going to use the ground bison, and we're going to make bison meatballs, bison balls, with a winter vegetable ragu. So that should be great, really stewy. Very heavy on the veg, very light on the balls. I wanted the dinner to be almost vegetarian. And Beej is pretty good friends with the Gunpowder Bison guys, like I said, in Maryland. And I'm really good friends with the root vegetables, BFFs, in fact, with a couple of those root vegetables. So it should be a good pairing. And when we did the root vegetable show back in the fall, I primarily talked about sunchokes, Jerusalem artichokes, sunchokes, turnips, and parsnips, because they were some of the earlier ones that were turning up. And those are three of my definite favorites. But there were a couple of the weirder, kind of more unapproachable ones that I didn't really have time to get to, like celery root and rutabagas. I think people avoid these two vegetables because they seem really, really hard to approach. They're kind of hard to tackle. Celery root has this knobbly, kind of rooty, dirty skin. And rutabagas have a thick skin that's often also coated with wax, to protect them kind of through those long, lonely months that they sit on the shelves. They're kind of like the Romanian orphans of vegetables. They just kind of sit there waiting for the right loving parents to take them home and nurture them. So knowing how to tackle these two beauties is the first step toward learning to love them. So when we come back in the second segment, that's what we're going to do. Learning how to love the rutabaga and the celery root. We'll be right back. Young man went out and made a name for himself. He's been on every record-breaking show in the Regal Theater in the last 2 years. Ladies and gentlemen, stop. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. Remember that you can listen to any show ever aired on Heritage Radio Network on the website, heritageradionetwork.com, in the archive, or you can download them, podcast them. What am I talking about? On iTunes. You can podcast them on iTunes, take them with you. So tonight on Why We Cook, I'm talking about two of the most unloved of the root vegetables, or not necessarily unloved, but misunderstood root vegetables. I did a show in the fall about root vegetables. I only kind of got through a couple of them. And these are like the real challenges, and we're heading into the depths of winter. You need to embrace them. You need to open up your root vegetable perspective a little bit more. Otherwise, you'll get really tired of turnips. Okay, so we're starting with celery root tonight. It's also called celeriac, or celery rave en français. If you went out into a celery field, your basic farm of celery, and you pulled a bunch up out of the ground, you would not find a celery root hanging from the end of it. Stalk celery is designed to put all its energy into the stalk, not the root. It has to pump all of its moisture, all its energy into making the big stalks. Celery root comes from a variety of celery that pumps all its energy into the root. And it has this little withered, kind of limp bunch of stalks on top that that you don't eat. Technically, celery root is a tuber, not a root. The roots grow off of the tuber, like potatoes are a tuber, not a root. A knobby protuberance with roots growing off of it, not a root, even though I call them roots. Anyway, the leaves are inedible, although I don't really know technically what that means. Like, would I drop dead if I ate them? It's like when you go mushrooming, there are mushrooms that are edible, mushrooms that are inedible, and mushrooms that are poisonous. I understand poisonous, I understand edible. What does inedible mean? Will I die? No. Will I get sick? Maybe. Does it taste bad? Probably. Anyway, the leaves are inedible. So they're usually sold trimmed anyway, with the leaves cut off, because if you're going to store these roots for a long time, the leaves will leach moisture out of the roots, so we don't leave the leaves on. And unlike other roots or tubers, which store a large amount of starch in them, celery roots are only about 5 to 6% starch by weight. They're actually very low in starch, so they need that moisture. They need the juice. So you want to take off the leaves so that they don't steal the juice. But if you do find celery root with the stalks attached, and usually in farmers markets, they leave the stalks attached, you'll notice that they're like little straws. They're hollow, and you can cut them off and use them to suck up a Bloody Mary. They make good little straws for Bloody Marys, because then the straw tastes like celery. And celery and Bloody Marys, perfect combination. Or other beverages that would benefit from a subtle celery flavor. Like a Tomatillo Bloody Mary. I just saw that in Sever magazine yesterday. I thought that sounded great. So to use the celery root, you have to peel it and get rid of all the little rootlets and bumps and dirt. So you have to use a knife, because a peeler can't hack it. Celery root peeler doesn't work. So use a knife and peel it down to its white interior, sort of a creamy white inside, and then get it right into water with a little bit of acid, because celery roots are like potatoes and apples. They'll oxidize if you leave them out in the air. So it's not a huge deal if they oxidize, but it looks nicer after you cook them. And then from there, you just can treat it like a potato. You can, or sort of like a potato, but a less starchy potato. You wouldn't grate a potato and eat it raw, but celery roots grated and eaten raw. Toss it with a little bit of lemon juice and olive oil. It's really good like that, or with a little bit of mayonnaise and Dijon mustard. You can make celery remoulade like they do in France. They eat it grated up raw with that sauce, remoulade. You could also shave it like super thin on a mandolin, like paper thin, and mix it with other vegetables and put it in a vinaigrette, which is really nice. It's crispy. I like the idea of shaving it super thin and then mixing it with celery hearts and celery leaves, so you have a trio of celery flavors in a salad. Maybe mince up a little bit of chili pepper and some shallots in there. Sounds good to me. That's a good winter salad, too. Anyway, you can also cook it, of course, like a potato. You can cut them into chunks and boil them or steam them and then mash them, which, you know, people always say, oh, yeah, it's a good low-carb mashed potato sub. You know, if that's kind of where you are with food. But I don't like the idea of calling anything a sub of something else. Either eat mashed potatoes or either eat mashed celery root. Why do we need sub? It annoys me. Just call it mashed celery root, you know, like mashed roasted cauliflower. Call it what it is. You can, you know, mash it and leave it chunky, or you can puree it really smooth. And unlike potatoes, if you puree them in a machine, they don't get gummy because they don't have those starch cells like potatoes. And I'm a really big fan of vegetable purees and pureed vegetable soups. And I think it's a great way to get a lot more vegetables into you is if you puree them and eat them, because all you have to do is swallow. There's no work involved. You don't have to do a lot of chewing. You know, sometimes I get tired. I get lazy. So you can just slurp it down and then you eat a lot more vegetables. It's a good way to trick kids into eating vegetables too, because they just have to drink it. But celery root puree, if you eat it thick, like as a thick puree or thinned out as a soup, is like a bowl of velvet heaven. You just boil or roast the celery root pieces and then, you know, sweat out a few shallots, some regular celery, a little garlic in some oil or butter, add a little bit of white wine or maybe some Marsala or even some beer, like not too strong beer, like a light flavored beer. And then simmer that all up until everything's kind of soft and mushy, and then puree it with chicken stock or water. And then if you want to get all restaurant-y, you could strain it through a mesh strainer before you serve it, because that's what we restaurant-y kind of people like to do. But then you also do lose a lot of the fiber in the soup and a lot of the bulk of the soup. And it makes a big mess. And you would then have to wash a strainer. That's what we restaurant-y people do when we have underpaid illegal workers washing dishes for us. That's the dirty secret. At home, it's a fiber fest. Don't strain. Don't bother with straining. You can also, of course, roast it. And if you've ever listened to this show before, you know that roasting is my favorite technique for cooking just about anything, especially vegetables. And like other roasted vegetables, it gets really sweet and caramelized and nutty and kind of crispy. And it's really good that way. And they're very low in starch, like I said. So it doesn't kind of have the really bulky, heavy, fill you up thing that other root vegetables tend to have. It's actually a little bit lighter. So you can roast it and then add those cubes into things like soups or chilies or stews or into braises. It'd be really good, like with a braised, bison or something, bison short ribs. It doesn't dissolve like the starchier root vegetables either. It holds its shape. So all around, it's good. So if you're shopping for celery root, if I've inspired you, try to buy them from a farmer's market, not a supermarket. I don't know if your supermarket would even have them, but this time of year, the farmers are still coming to the farmer's market and they're still trying to make a living and they're standing there shivering in their little farmer boots and they don't have a lot to sell other than the root vegetables and the tubers and maybe some jam. And we need to keep supporting them so they can stay in business and come back in the spring when they sell us the asparagus and the peas and the ramps and the spinach. So a good fresh celery root, buy it from these guys, it'll last for 3 to 4 months in your fridge if you keep it cold. I mean, you should buy it and eat it, but if you forget and leave it in there, it'll last until spring, and then you can puree it and eat it with spinach and asparagus and ramps and all that stuff. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the rutabaga hour. We'll be right back on Why We Cook.
The Tomorrow People.
What is the magic that makes one's eyes sparkle and gleam, light up the skies? The name of the game is Lightworks.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway Market, like no other market. That's some crazy music we're playing in between the segments these days. Not my choice, but interesting. Anyway, we're talking about the two most misunderstood and unloved root vegetables of the year. That would be the celery root and the rutabaga. So we talked about celery root in the last segment. And now we come to the rutabaga portion of the evening's show. The poor rutabaga, who really knows what to do with them? I mean, have you ever even really bought one? Has anybody really ever bought one? I have. I've bought them, I've cooked them, I've eaten them, but I'm a professional. And, you know, what are they? Do you really know what they are? And why are they waxed? Do we understand this? So it turns out that the rutabaga originated as a naturally occurring hybrid of turnips and cabbage. Somewhere out there in Scandinavia, a long time ago, a turnip and a cabbage got together. And they had an offspring, and it was a rutabaga. And that's really what rutabagas are. They're turnip and cabbage commingled. You can actually eat the leaves of them like turnip greens, but I have never seen a rutabaga with the leaves attached to it, ever. I'm going to look more closely next fall. But they're in that brassica family, you know, the brassicas. The brassicas are those vegetables like rape, unfortunately named rape, like broccoli rabe, rape, kale and mustard greens. So the leaves of the rutabaga are really high in omega-3s and the cancer fighters that the brassicas have. And the roots, which are yellow, rutabagas are yellow, are really high in beta carotene, like beets. So they're one of those two-in-one double-dose powerhouse vegetables. So if you can find them with the roots, let me know, because I would like to, I mean, with the leaves, because I'd like to try the leaves too. But they're really all about the root. I mean, they're the roots are gigantic. They're like the size of softballs. And they have this kind of nice, creamy, semi-starchy texture, not as starchy as a potato, not as crunchy as like a jicama or a celery root. And they're a little bit peppery, a little bit pungent, because they're in that mustard family. They have a little bit of that mustardy kind of complex to them. And so you see these sometimes in the supermarket. They're usually like on the bottom shelf of the root section, and they're really thickly waxed. And the wax is there to protect them, because nobody ever buys them. So they sit there for months and months and months, and the wax keeps them from drying out and from rotting. But if you buy them right from a farmer's market, they won't be waxed. They don't bother doing that. They come originally from Scandinavia, and that's where they first grew wild, after that turnip and cabbage got together. And they're really eaten extensively there. They eat them a lot. Sweden, Norway, all those cold, dark places, they eat a lot of rutabagas. And in other northern European countries too, especially in the British Isles. But the Brits call them Swedes, not rutabagas. I remember being in London for a while and people talking about Swedes, and it took me a while to realize they were talking about vegetables. Or they call them Swedish turnips. The Scots call them neeps. You ever hear someone offer you neeps and tatties? It's potatoes and rutabaga. And the Irish call them turnips. So there's a little bit of confusion there. But, you know, it's very confusing for such a kind of simpleton of a vegetable. They keep for a really long time, which is good, because, like I said, nobody buys them. And then once they're waxed, they're practically immortal. So if you buy one and you wait a few months, it'll still be okay. You'll keep it. One of these days, I'm going to sneak into a supermarket and I'm going to put a little tracking device in one of the supermarket rutabagas and see how long it stays there. I'm going to keep track of it and see how many years it's there. They're definitely not like the sexiest of vegetables, but they are one of the tastiest. You just have to learn to love them. So like celery root, you know, if you can just grow up and get beyond the facade of beauty and discover the real person inside, you'll be deeply rewarded by them. And, you know, you just treat the rutabaga like a turnip or a potato, or just replay the last segment of the show, because you basically cook them exactly the same way you would cook a celery root. You can eat them raw or cooked. And the cooking methods are so similar that I'm actually boring myself talking about it. So I'm going to just leave it there. Just make sure you peel them, which seems pretty obvious to me, but this is the country where people eat the plastic grass that comes with their sushi, so you never know. Sometimes you just have to spell things out. Don't think I'm giving them short shrift by not talking about how to cook them, but there's really only so much cooking advice I can actually give you before I have to just push you out of the root cellar and into the kitchen. So good luck with that. Happy hunting. Go out, embrace those roots, eat well, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.